Welcome to Sidetracked, your unofficial agency of record. I'm Emily.
And I'm Shane, and we help run Trek, a tech-driven creative services agency based in Rockford, Illinois. Trek is a full-service marketing agency, which means we do it all. And we've been around since 1995, which means we've seen it all.
In Season 1 of Sidetracked, we'll cover everything from AI and digital advertising to branding best practices and how to stand out with print marketing.
We believe that problems are identified by the curious and solved by the courageous.
Which is why we always start with a question. All right, so today's big question is, what are we doing as an agency about artificial intelligence or AI? To help us answer this question, we've brought in our technical director, Sam Vasily. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me.
Excited to have you here. So Sam, Shane, and I are a part of the managing directors group. We work to run Trek together. And we've been experimenting individually with AI, learning about it in our different roles and on behalf of our teams. But I'd say this is the first year that we really came together to address it as a group. And it's a journey. We're still figuring it out. We're not going to tell you that we have all the answers, that we have this perfect plan that's going to work for everybody, all of our clients. But it's a journey. So maybe, Sam, you could tell us a little bit about what that journey has looked like for us this year.
It's been a learning experience, just like any other new technology or new factor. It's come on fast, faster than many things have come on in the past. It's been something that I've seen. Other changes, like in changes in like chip technology, for instance, where things just grew at an exponential rate, AI is doing that same thing. So the journey has been an interesting one. Cases of working together as a group, investigating, debating just what our role is going to be in AI, trying to figure out how we're going to deal with AI internally as well as with our clients. And how we plan to roll it out internally to our company and in regards to the numerous tools that are available for our own employees to use and work with.
And I think it was important to us as a managing directors group not to come up with our idea of how the company should use AI and then, roll it out top down. We really wanted to hear from everyone in the company about how they were already using AI or ways that they thought their specific jobs might be made more efficient or improved by AI tools. So we sort of took a crowdsourcing approach to it.
Yeah, and this is not different really for us, because obviously Sam's our technical director. We've always had technical experts since the beginning of our formation as an agency. So we've always had that technology first kind of mindset. And when you explore new technologies, we've done the test internally first kind of method before, like, making it a service that we're offering to our clients. So our first really step this year has been, yeah, that first, like, how do we do this internally? What does this look like for our people and for us as an agency, so that maybe soon-ish we'll start talking about it with our customers in whatever way that makes sense, more broad scale. We've started that a little bit, which we'll get into in our problem solved, but spoiler alert.
And I think it was great to see the directors get together and say, this is not just a technology, but how's that going to affect our people? Like, how do we make them feel comfortable with what we're doing with AI, and that we're not gunning for their jobs, but we're using AI as a tool to help them to be more successful and to give them the tools that they need to create better products.
So in this, like, investigating phase that you're talking about, in talking, crowdsourcing, Shane, like you said, what do you think our biggest pushback has been with one another and with talking to our internal teams. I have a question in mind, or I have one point in mind, but I'm curious what you two think about the resistance that you feel when you're on this journey of figuring out AI for your company.
Oh, I think the biggest challenge so far has been people finding the time to do the AI research that they want to do. I think a lot of people here are interested in it, but they've also got full days. And so setting aside time to do R&D on a new technology is not always easy. I've heard people say you should, you know, set aside one role at your company that's just dedicated to AI and staying ahead of all the advancements and doing all of the research and then communicating that out to the rest of the company. And then I've heard the opposing viewpoint that everybody should be doing this research. It shouldn't just be one person. We all need to understand it. We all need to think about it in different ways and bring our own unique roles and perspectives to the research. I tend to go more with that latter approach. I think we all do need to be researching it, but finding the time is tough.
Yeah, I agree. I think that latter point is an important one, because that will drift away from that top-down kind of mandate of here's the tool, more towards the the widespread use of a tool that people are thinking about and looking at and acting a group working together to come up with tools that work for the company.
So Sam, what do you think the resistance you've heard? And we're not saying names here. We're not putting
any I think the resistance in general, if you look at it, just not only within this company but within just in general with anyone who's looking at AI, is that there's that fear again of this thing's going to take away some of my livelihood. And while it's true that it may tackle some of the low-hanging fruit tasks, right, I think once you learn more about what AI really is and what it does, it may supplement what you do, but it's not going to always replace what you can do. Way back when I was teaching people on high-end mathematical software, I always told them, hey, this software is not smarter than you are. It's just faster than you are. It still needs your expertise in there to lend your brain into what's being shown on the screen, to say, okay, this answer got solved quickly, but does it make sense? And the same thing is going to happen with AI, because AI is just a predictive solution, right? Does what AI is sending me right now, or what AI is providing me right now, is it make sense for what I want to, for the task I want to accomplish? So.
Mm-hmm. I think the question that's in my mind is the one that says that this is just hype, that this is a technology that is overhyped, because it is. But I think the responsibility for us as directors is to not just get stuck in the hype of today, people overhyping it, talking about it too much, talking about it in all these different ways, but recognizing that there is truth in that, that it is a revolutionary technology. We've lived through this in the internet. We were started as an agency at the beginning of the internet. You know, like, we've been through these kinds of things before. But I think there's just a general amount of disbelief that it is going to be what it's promised to be. So our responsibility is kind of to filter through that noise, help get everyone on board with how do we think about the future, cast a vision for the future in a way that's specific to us and beneficial for people. Like, we have the ability to make space for where we want to be in this, which is also holding tension with, like, what is the technology today? Because sometimes where we're casting the vision of what we want to do, where we want to be, it's not always possible with today's tool sets, hasn't been figured out with today's AI tool sets, because it changes so frequently. So rolling that back, in summary, people are saying that, or maybe there's, you know, these ideas that is AI really the big deal everyone's making it out to be? And then combating that or countering that with reality of the fact that it is going to change our business slowly or rapidly. We don't know, but we know that it will change. So we need to adapt. And that's what we've always done at Trek. So we're comfortable in this space, even if we're uncomfortable in a technology.
And I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. It is rapidly evolving. Whether it'll hit all the goals that that are being predicted, maybe, maybe not. But it is here, and it is moving. And people need to keep up with what's going on.
So this journey started with kind of this investigation phase, crowdsourcing, kind of getting the sense of where we are today or were then and where we can go. Then we moved in as a group into kind of developing the policy. What is our AI policy? So Sam, can you tell us a little bit about that process together?
Yeah, so I guess there was kind of a twofold policy, and you guys can jump in here too. Is number one, we talked about the global policy, which was really what did AI mean to us as a company. And then, Shane, you did a great job of helping to develop those basic bullet points that help drive the general philosophy of the company and AI. And then from there, we took it a little further. And my thought process on that was, okay, from a technology standpoint, well, I can understand the security implications or maybe look at security implications. And I can look at tools from a technical standpoint, of tools from technical development. But I wouldn't know a lot about maybe things from the creative standpoint or things from the content standpoint. And so that really lended the need for more of a committee of people who brought in information from all walks of our company, all of our groups, so that we could develop a comprehensive policy and a comprehensive set of tools that the company worked with as an entire organization.
I was actually going to say, maybe Shane, you should read our global beliefs.
That's what I was hoping we could jump to, is maybe cover those bullet
read
points.
Read it out. Yeah. We started with some basic promises before we got into the actual policy, sort of like just guiding principles, because we know that the policy is going to change and evolve as the technology evolves. So we wanted to have some promises laid out first that we can return to as it does. Number one, we said we will put people first. We decided early on that we definitely wanted to take a human-first approach to any AI that we bring into Trek. We view it as an amplifier of human creativity, not a replacement for what our people can do. Number two, we promised to always protect our clients' data. So like Sam was saying, thinking about the security implications of any new tools that we're bringing on, thinking about the risks, our clients' data is incredibly important to us. They trust us with it. And so we need to be putting that first in any new tools that we evaluate, AI or otherwise. And then number three, and this is particular to us as an agency, because as an agency, one of the things that we deliver to our clients when we are delivering them original work is the ability to transfer a copyright from us to the client with that deliverable. And so our third promise is that we will never put our clients at risk by representing AI-generated content as our own. So our work product will continue to be original creative work product with a copyright that can be transferred to our clients. So we started there.
A step in the process for us at this point was, okay, we've established what we believe to be true about AI at Trek, the things that we want to be true forever, or, well, you know, for the foreseeable future. And then the quote-unquote policy kind of manifested in these do's and don'ts. And in looking for examples of policies, there just weren't any really out there, and we didn't know which format this should take because it was just not, it wasn't being done. So for us, the list of do's and don'ts was the easiest way to communicate to people what's safe, what's not, and keep it really simple because AI can be very overwhelming. It can be confusing. And if you don't have any reference for the technology, or if you're not as in depth in the technology about the understanding of it, you needed to still be able to understand what the policy was saying. So the do's and don'ts are sort of tying back to those initial promises. And our things like our do's are, do understand that using AI tools, especially Gen AI tools, it's not a substitute for human creativity. So then we'll use it in these ways. Do use it in the approved channels and the approved tools. Do use it in ways that align with our mission and company values. And some of these are kind of maybe obvious, but when you put it in writing, it kind of helps bring it to the forefront of everyone's minds. You just want to kind of over-communicate. We wanted to over-communicate rather than under-communicate when there's so much uncertainty there. And then the don'ts were a little bit more specific. Don't upload or input confidential, proprietary, or sensitive information into, you know, an unapproved tool, an open source tool. Don't represent your work, your original work, something. Don't represent generated work as your own original work, you know, protecting that copyright, protecting that integrity of the quality of work that our humans do. So that's kind of just an overview of how we treated it.
Let's talk about the council.
Yeah. So where are we going? Now we've got we have a general set of guidelines. So where did we take it from there? I think the next natural evolution of that was to say, okay, here we have a bunch of tools that are sitting in our toolbox already. What are those tools doing? How do they apply to the guidelines we've just set out? And what other tools are coming along that may need to be evaluated from the same perspective and guidelines? And I think the directors quickly realized that that could be an overwhelming task just in itself. And it also presented an opportunity for people within the TREC organization to actually contribute to the general guiding principles of the company. So again, not relying on a top-down, do-as-I-say attitude, but really giving people a stake in what's going on. And so with the general guidelines in place, you can then evolve from that a committee where you can have them evaluate tools along those guidelines and ask the questions and do the investigations and make the appropriate recommendations to the managing directors, where the directors can then take an informed set of information, again, then look at that and either come back with more questions or just approve or deny based on the recommendations of that committee. So it becomes a bigger working group than just a group of directors itself.
And so the committee is researching, surfacing new tools. Other employees at TREC are surfacing tools to the committee for them to review. Very quickly after the committee was formed, also most of the tools we were already using added some AI feature. So it was easy to kind of start there. You know, Adobe's added AI and HubSpot's added AI. Okay, these are in the tools we're already using. They're very in our face every day. Let's figure out if we're okay with using them or not. And the whole goal is for the committee to then come up with this approved list of tools that have been vetted and that the directors agree we can use internally, that then any TREC employee, if they want to make their work more efficient or better using an AI tool, they have an approved list of tools that they can go to.
And then likewise, a company as a whole knows that if they would like to start using a new tool, they know where to go. They know who they can approach to say, I've been investigating this tool, and this is why I think we should consider using it. The committee can then take it from there and work with that team member to determine whether it's something new and useful, or whether maybe there's already another tool in the set of the approved set that accomplishes the same goal.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we wanted to do to set up this committee for success, knowing that, to your point earlier, Shane, that it's a big hurdle overcoming adding new responsibilities when you already have a lot on your plate. And so one of the things that we wanted to help with was the education piece, and we purchased a seat for a course of onboarding AI for each of our committee members, so that they had their own research. They each had their own interest, passion, whatever, for AI, but we gave them that extra layer of training and equipping to help them actually figure out what to do with the information that they get. And we can link to the course that we chose in the show notes for reference. But I think that was a good point, because I hear a lot of people talking about AI and training your people once you have the tool. But if you need to enlist help evaluating the tools, figuring out how to evaluate the tools, you know, you kind of need to train on that end too. So it's a constant learning for everybody on an ongoing basis. So I think that, from my perspective, is a helpful piece of that AI council, the AI committee. So then from there, what did we do, Shane?
We had a company all hands meeting to talk about this, where we introduced the AI policy and the committee to the entire company. The committee came up with a form that anyone at the company could use to submit suggestions for new tools. They created their own Slack channel. They're having meetings to discuss these tools. We're seeing how it goes. It is still a journey. I think that in some ways it's gone really well. And the biggest challenge continues to be just time. Because even though we've sort of spread the work out, among a larger group, it still takes time to even take this training course in how to evaluate AI tools and have the meeting with the committee. So in the meantime, AI continues to evolve very quickly.
So quickly. To end here, what is your favorite AI tool that you're both currently using? I know Sam's answer.
Yeah. Yeah, she knows my answer. My answer right now, and this is kind of the interesting evolution of AI, I think, is I go to Perplexity more than I go to a Google search now, right? Because it's such a focused answer. When you ask it, when you can use a natural language, question answer situation, you can really hammer down and get the answer you need with citations. Which are, again, very important. It's heads and tails above just standard search.
I was trying to think of something different, but Perplexity is really one of the only AI tools that I've been using consistently. And I use it for mostly for research. Yeah, like a really amped up Google search. I use it for, we do a lot of like competitive analyses for our clients, building out buyer personas. So it's really nice to be able to go to Perplexity and say, give me a list of trade magazines in this particular industry that have media kits available online with links to the media kits. It just makes my research that I would have done via Google go a lot faster.
I think for me, I would have said Perplexity earlier in the year. I've not been doing as much research in the second half of the year for whatever reason. But I have been doing a lot of strategizing, trying to figure out positioning, high level kind of thinking. And I have done a number of talks this year on the topic of AI with different audiences. So I have done a lot of experimenting with tools. And one of the tidbits of advice I found to be the most helpful was using ChatGPT, a paid version, as sort of like a thought partner in like, give me a positioning for a specific type of person if you were looking to do my particular thing. So for example, let's say I was trying to figure out the needs of a group of people, the top concerns for a group of people who are in the United States who meet this criteria. You know, tell me the top three things that they would care about and why. I'm trying to present this kind of thing to them, and I need background, I need context. Like, I'm giving it like a full thing, like I'm sitting down with Shane saying, hey, I have this project for you. So it's a boring answer, but my answer is ChatGPT, and just kind of like using it as sort of a brainstorm kind of place when I feel like I'm alone in something to figure it out and I need to get outside of my head. So that's, I think I would say ChatGPT at this point.
I am very excited to try Notebook LM. I haven't yet, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. So I kind of want to put all my old journals in there and then see what it spits back out.
You know, I think my brother does something like that.
I'm tempted.
And then it gives you like, is that the one that gives you like analysis on your, like a psychoanalysis?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You could probably put all your old notebook stuff in and then ask it to write a whole new book for you or an article for you based on your own writings.
But here's the thing. I don't want that because the fun part of writing is the writing.
Is the writing.
Says the writer. But yeah. Sam and I are thinking, well, that'd be great if somebody could write something for me.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
So how are we using AI to solve problems for our clients? Sam, I know you've been working on a really fun project. Can you tell us about the AI-powered product selector that you've been building?
Yeah, so this, I think, really is a natural evolution of how you can make a customer experience better through AI. We all know, and you can find them anywhere, whether you're going to any major department store or any type of industrial client, where you can find products online and you use some sort of filterable search to narrow down your list of items so that you can kind of zone in and zero in on the one that best meets your needs. But with AI, you can take that like one step further, and this is the really, really amazing thing that I find about AI is you. With AI, we have a client that has a bunch of great sales content. Spent a lot of time, perfecting the sales content, the sell sheets, the information within those sell sheets. With AI, we can take that information now, and we can vectorize that and search the sales content. So now instead of just doing filterable searches by size, color, width, height, you know, very tangible things, you can ask it very natural questions about, I'm looking for the best product that meets these needs, right? And ask it that question, and it will use that sales literature, whether it be technical sales literature or just more of a descriptive analysis of that product, and come back with multiple answers, again with citations, that will help satisfy that person's question. So I think it's the next. Evolution of something that's been around forever, and it's going to become kind of the replacement standard for the product selector.
I'm really excited about this because the way I see websites going with the future of search and AI overviews being included in search and people using AI tools to search and getting their answers right, either on the search results page or within the AI tool, they're not going to need to come to our clients' websites as often to get the information that they're looking for. And so websites are going to shift from being top of funnel informational to more middle of funnel or bottom of funnel. I'm trying to compare multiple products or I'm trying to make a purchase. And this AI product selector is the perfect tool to have on a website in the future of the web. We're going to need to be building websites that have tools like this instead of just information.
Yeah, I like the idea of reimagining the customer experience completely in every way that they interact with the brand. You know, buying the product, searching for the product, like thinking about, okay, throw all the rules out the window. What is a better user experience for getting the information that I need or achieving the action that I need to achieve? And it kind of, it is exciting. It is an exciting time. And I think, Shane, what you said is important too. You know, Google's AI overviews, we have thoughts, we have feelings on that. Long term, I think what you're saying is true. It will end up benefiting us if people are finding our website further down the funnel versus it being like today where they're all mostly awareness, getting to know you. They won't have that step anymore. They're coming to you. I think it is good to start thinking about your website experience, your website customer experience, and ways that you can start to move towards that future of a more effective website. So everyone wants their websites to generate more business for them, not just leads, not potential business. Everyone wants ROI on their website. And I think these trends are kind of getting us to a place that's forcing us to build websites that help really drive ROI for marketing efforts. So we're optimistic. It's a good
thing. It's like AI is forcing our hand on it. It's causing the problem in a way, but it's also the solution. It's helping us with the solution.
Yeah, because the really cool thing about these types of searches is you can have the agent always ask, hey, would you like more information? Would you like to be contacted? Do you need more assistance? You're encouraging engagement. It's just not here's an answer. It's like, okay, here's the answer. And hey, if you need more help, or if you'd like to talk to someone, or if you'd like to have us contact you, we can do that. And you can have the agent, you know, add that response as part of the search response. Have the agent say, always ask them if they'd like more help. And that will drive more engagement between your potential client and you. It's just not a search anymore. It's an interactive session.
Do you want to go into the weeds a little bit more and tell us about like the technology behind what you're building and like the LLM or the platform that you're working through?
We're testing on a couple of different models. We're looking at situations where we'll use a small language model on some of the smaller groups of data, possibly looking at keeping that language model local to the cluster that might be serving the response.
Meaning we'll build it ourselves, host it on our servers?
We'll use the language model, some of the smaller open source language models out there, some by Meta, for instance, that are small enough to actually hold down on a local server. And then use those versus maybe going to a larger situation where if it's a bigger client and a bigger data set, where then we use something like a Microsoft technology, Azure technology, where we use their technologies and hook to open source language models through their kind of their connectors, and then hold everything up in the cloud from that standpoint. In that case, we'd be paying for the tokens that are based on what the question is and what the response is. So that's more of a pay-as-you-go type thing versus a smaller language model where you are not paying for any exchange, in a sense, between your agent's traffic between it and its response back.
I think that a token model is kind of the future of the way people are going to monetize AI, that I'm seeing the trends of HubSpot, and obviously Anthropic uses that with Claude, and then, you know, kind of like what you're talking about here, the way that the pay to play is not just a license, it is pay by data.
Right.
Tokens.
Right. Because, yeah, how do you monetize something that, you know, has a lot of open source to it? You basically pay for the traffic. I'm going to pay for your use of my highway, so to speak.
AI tolls.
Yep.
I have a question, Sam.
Sure.
You've seen a lot of technologies come and go over the years. I'm curious, what are some examples of ones that had a lot of hype that didn't live up to the hype? And how and when did you know that AI was going to be different?
Good question.
Well, one that didn't have a lot of hype but didn't pan out to anything, and everybody loves it. If you go back to the old days of Clippy, okay, Clippy on Word, right? Clippy was there to help solve your problems. Clippy became a meme for being just a general pain, right? And so there is something that someone tried to make people's lives easier that just did not pan out. So that is one. You're going to have to help me on this one, guys. What are the two-wheeled vehicles, the electric vehicles where you stand on them and
like a hoverboard?
No, Segways. Segways were going to change the way we evolved it, way we transporting ourselves across cities, right? Segways never, in my book, never panned out. You know, so those were terrible. And I don't think AI is coming like that. I think AI is more like language translation, even though language translation is are smaller, but the impact that you know, multilingual translation tools had on the industry, I think was very impactful. Changed the way people did business in terms of multilingual content.
I have a hot take.
Let's hear your hot take.
Yeah.
I think that apps are overrated. I think that we develop them. So I'm not there. There's definitely a time and place today for that technology. But I feel like if we're thinking about the future, and apps have been revolutionary in the sense of you had an iPhone. I remember when the iPhone came out, you had the apps that the iPhone came on. And then suddenly you could develop your own apps and it was like, oh my gosh, the world changed. It just totally opened up. I think they're going to evolve into different ways of working, not like apps on the phone, but more embedded in the phone, if that makes sense, in the what the phone can do. But I think there's a serious app fatigue, which is maybe not the same as the technology not panning out to what it was predicted to be. But yeah, that's my hot take. I think apps are overrated most of the time.
But there's that's a great thought, because in the very beginning of apps, people would come to us and say, I need an app. And we'd say, okay, what would you like that app to do? What do you want to accomplish with the app? I don't know. Everybody has an app and I want one. Okay, you may see that same trend in AI. I need AI. And the question still has to be, okay, what do you want AI to do for you? How do you want it to make things, improve things? And we're going to get that. I don't know. Everybody has AI on there, and I need it too. So it's going to be a very parallel situation in that respect.
Yeah, and I think our response is the same. You know, it's not one size fits all. A huge AI initiative is not a fit for everybody today. I think everybody can benefit from AI, at least in small ways today as a business. We're talking to B2B or B2C marketers here. Then I think everyone can benefit immediately, but it may not be that they need big, robust solutions and rollouts and all that kind of thing. Just how, you know, today we might say, I'm not going to develop a specific app to do this for you because there's a program that already does it. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need it. That's not your issue. It's not that you need an app. Your issue is whatever you're coming to us to solve. Communication, whatever it is. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Sam. It's been great to have you. We enjoy your perspective.
It's been fun. Thank you so much.
See you later.
Take care.
Sidetracked is the name of the bar inside Trek, where it's not uncommon to find a copywriter and a designer brainstorming a new project, an account manager hosting a client for happy hour, and our creative director and head mixologist, Mike Wilson, mixing up something fun.
In this season of Sidetracked, Mike's making his way through a 1970s cocktail recipe book, and we volunteered to be his taste testers.
Mike's at the bar, and he made us a drink.
What'd you make us, Mike?
Today, I made you guys a Commodore. And it is a combination of bourbon, curacao, and lime juice. And for the non-alcoholic version, we ended up using a non-alcoholic whiskey along with orange juice.
Okay. Well, mine is a light yellow color. Thank you for the nice red cherry in it.
You're welcome.
Looks delicious.
Are you a straw person?
I am not a straw person.
I am. Can I get a straw?
Yes, you may.
Okay, thanks.
All right, I'm going to taste mine.
Right, wait. Cheers.
Cheers. Ooh. It's better than I thought it would be.
This tastes like flavored water. To be fair, this is the non-alcoholic version. It is a little bit like watered down lemonade.
Yeah, this is like a watered down old fashioned.
A lot of water happening here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not terrible. Maybe I would like it without the club soda.
What would you substitute?
Nothing.
Just on the rocks.
I probably wouldn't drink this again.
Fair enough.
All right. Maybe it would be a refreshing summer drink.
Yes, by the pool.
By the pool, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Outside, hot day.
I live in Florida. This would be great. By the pool.
I can see it. I'm going to take one more sip. Yeah, I mean, it's sour. It's sour and watered down. You did a great job.
You know, the presentation is 10 out of 10. Taste is probably 2 out of 10.
All right, I'll take it.
Thanks for joining us. If you liked this episode of Sidetracked, please rate and review it or share it with a friend. You can also subscribe and you can learn more about us at Trek.com.
Oh, one more thing. I am so creeped out by AI avatars. I'm not a fan.
What is an AI avatar?
It is apparently, well, there's two things. There's an avatar that can show up for you on a Zoom call and interact for you, like pretend to be you.
No.
No, not a fan.
No, thank you.
But then there's also an avatar that you can use to create videos. And it's, again, a version of you talking and saying things that you didn't say.
Don't love that.
Yeah, me neither. Freaks me out. Not a fan. Okay. Bye.
All right. See you later.